Someone, how many hours is someone?
You have 7 minutes.
All right. The purpose, these clocks are called building the soul body. And the purpose of the clocks is to be the, is to show the primary purpose why the Rosicrucian Fellowship exists. We brought that out in the first talk. We said that the Rosicrucian Fellowship was, had a philosophy that was an evolutionary philosophy. We talked about that idea of an evolutionary philosophy in several ways. And with regard to that evolutionary philosophy, what we said was that the purpose or the existence of the Rosicrucian Fellowship is to prepare humanity for taking the next step in evolution. That's the primary reason we exist as an organization. And that next step is building the soul body. Oh, we're going to start all over. All kinds of new people.
Are there chairs?
Yeah. All right, we're doing a quick review, which will be very unlike the original. I'm one of those people that can't say something twice exactly the same way because it goes against my character.
So
we're saying that the purpose for these talks is to show the idea that the Rosicrucian Fellowship exists for the purpose of preparing all of humanity, including ourselves, for taking the next step in evolution. And that preparation is preparing the soul body, which is called in the Bible the golden wedding garment. If you don't have the golden wedding garment, you can't go to the wedding, which is the wedding, the alchemical wedding of the spiritual being with the personal. The building of that soul body allows us to live consciously and to function consciously in the etheric realm after the physical earth has dissolved. So in that first talk, we introduced the idea of an evolutionary philosophy, a spiritual evolutionary philosophy, and we talked about what that means. And then we ended up by trying to give a very brief outline of what the big picture of evolution is, so that we could see what the next step entailed and what it was part of a very grand thing. In the second talk, we talked exclusively about the four ethers and the etheric body. We tried to relate them a little bit to science. We tried to relate them to activities in daily life. Yesterday, we talked about actually acquiring the material for the soul body. And we talked about bodybuilding, how it is done by exercise, and how it is done by food. And then we spent the rest of the evening speaking about the light ether. We spoke about how using the ethers is one way that we acquire more of them. And we said that one of the functions of the negative pole of the light ether was taking in sunlight and causing coloration. And therefore, we said that it qualified as a spiritual exercise to go sunbathing. And that really isn't trivial, because in the future, this is mildly speculative, but in the future, people are going to be blue. And if there is the coincidence, but difference in terminology, between ultraviolet light and part of the etheric spectrum, as you look at the definition of the ethers, from either Max Heindel or Rudolf Steiner and put it next to somebody like Feynman's lectures on physics, and you see the two are extremely similar, that they don't pass through a glass and a number of things like that, that they're very similar to each other. But we know that there's a hole in the ozone layer and that the general atmosphere of the Earth is changing. And that in some ways, that extra ultraviolet light coming in is what in Christianity is called the New Jerusalem. It's a new evolutionary condition. And we have to meet that new evolutionary condition. And the way we do that is through the individual vital bodies. Yeah, really, it wasn't anything like the original. It's through the etheric vital body. And we're going to have to counter the influx of radiation by radiating from our vital body and by bringing more blood vessels to the surface, no matter what our racial background may be. We're going to appear more bluish because we're bringing more blood vessels to the surface to bring more energy out so that we don't get burned. This is one of the features of evolution. We have to develop from within and not let the external world overwhelm us. All right. Then we talked for the rest of the evening, we talked about two different systems. First of all, the exercises that we talked about, the serious work right now of building into our vital bodies at the negative pole of the light ether, observation. We talked about observation and discrimination and how we learn how to see and how we learn how to hear and to use all of our senses so that we can, in fact, see better. And by doing so, we actually bring ourselves into a realm of light. And bring it into our very being. Then we talked about two major systems in our bodies, specializations and concentrations of the ethers in the nervous fluid, or what is called the nervous fluid, and in the bloodstream. And we said that the nervous fluid had its center in the brain, and it related to the human spirit, the thinker. And that was one of the systems that worked in the body. The other system is the etheric component of the blood, where the spirit drives the blood. And we said that the blood system had its center in the heart, and that it related to the life spirit, and that the life spirit goes beyond the human spirit. It is beyond the self into the universal selfness. And for this reason, when one is acting for the sake of Christ from the life spirit through the blood, that one acts unselfishly. And we said that the primary thing of the positive pole, the reflecting ether, is heating and driving the blood. And when we are driven by altruistic acts of self-forgetting service, that we actually build light ether into our bodies. Now that's where we left off last night. We're going to continue on from there. Now the light ether and the life ether, even though they come from different spiritual realms or from spiritual centers, they are like the things of the spirit. They work cooperatively. The brain is a very excellent example because brain tissue is so late in evolution, and since the thinking process is deathly, and brain cells and other nervous cells die, you have to make very sure that they're protected. And the brain is double protected. It's protected by the cerebrospinal fluid, which is sort of a shock absorber, but it goes even further than that. It carries food to the brain, just like the blood does. But the blood itself, the supply of the blood to the brain is enormous. There's actually a ring of blood that is fresh blood in the center of the brain that protects the area. Well, you know the name. What is it, the name, Elliot? The circle of blood.
Circle of Willis.
Circle of Willis.
Right.
That provides a constant supply of blood to the parts of the brain that are vital, that if they were to be starved of oxygen or starved of nutrition, it would be disastrous to our living here. So the blood helps out the nervous system. So the life spirit helps out the human spirit. Similarly, the human spirit helps out the life spirit because the circulation itself, especially in the venous circulation, is augmented by nerves that contract and dilate the blood vessels so that it's easier to pump the blood or bring the blood or drive the blood back to the heart. Another way that the nerves help the blood is that there are regulatory nerves that help to regulate the pace of the heart. The heart has its own pacemaker, but the nerves help to help the regulation of the heart. All right, so they work together. So now we're ready to go into a very, very brief little study of the negative pole of the reflecting ether. In an earlier talk, we said that the function of the negative pole of the reflecting ether is memory. Now, Rosicrucian investigators find out that there are various kinds of memories in nature. This is because every activity in nature leaves its effects, leaves the outcome of its actions in the stuff where the actions occurred. Last year's growth is reflected in this year's tree ring. That's one way that it happens. Even very soft tissue of animals long dead millions of years ago are left behind as fossils. Those are all memories. Even the layers of sediment themselves tell us what the conditions of the earth was like over thousands of years. I'd like to go a lot of side trips, and I'm pretty good along, so I'll just try to go back. In our bodies, we have several kinds of memories too. We have things like scars, and we have muscles that we've built from previous activities, and we have memories of our conscious actions in our physical and etheric brains. In some ways, you might say that everything that we live in is memories. All of our logic is a consequence of memory. It's because we remembered one thing and another and then figured out that they were associated that we are able to make logical connections. Logic is always in the past. Love is of the future. It's another difference between the nervous system and the blood system. Now, some of the memories we have, we can access. And some we seem to be almost unable to get at. Now, all of the conscious memories, including scars, can be useful. I have scars that I have from reckless actions, and I tend to look at them when I'm about to do another reckless action. It is a useful thing. But there's another memory that's more important, and it's really engaging. And to get at it, I'll try to talk about something a little bit funky. In Japan, there is an art that is called ink painting. It's done with brushes and ink on very, very thin rice paper. You've maybe seen it. There are these very quick stroke paintings, and they're made in a fraction of a second. It's extremely difficult to become an artist in this because the tissue is so frail and it easily dissolves if there's too much ink, almost like toilet paper does. So the artist has to work extremely fast and has to be extremely deft or the paper will dissolve, or if you have a heavy brush stroke, you might punch right through the paper. And you don't get a second chance. And the whole painting is finished in a trice, just a matter of seconds. So what happens is that the artists practice and they think on something for years. The regimen requires enormous self-control. And it involves receptivity. You have to be in just a perfect receptive state. It's a perfect attitude thing. All of the Zen arts are like that. Haiku is like that. You have to be in a perfect state in order for the intuition to strike through with the haiku. Now, our life on Earth, and even our material evolution, is something like that. If you think about it, it's like the Bible verse that says, remember this, my child, with God, a thousand years is as a day, and a day is as a thousand years. Relative to the many billions of years of material existence, our 70-odd years here is almost like a rice painting. We don't get a second chance. We can't go back, at least in this life. We can come back for another life. But when we've committed ourselves to a way of life, I have it happen every few years. There are things that when I look back at my life, I say to myself, I never would have guessed I would have become like this. And when you look back, you say, wow, for the decisions I made, I couldn't become anything other than what I did become. Because when you make those decisions, your character is invested in them, and you grow accordingly. But even these 70-some-odd years that we get here, 90 if you're lucky like my father, and these few billions of years that the solar system is in existence, this state is a very difficult state to sustain. You think about it, if you try practicing concentration in the form of visualization, you can work for years without even getting a dim image. But if you think that the concentration of the focus of the universal spirit that we call God is such that its concentration condenses this stuff. Now that's and is able to hold it for billions of years. You're talking about something that's quite remarkable, but it's difficult. And it's held as long and as deep as the concentration of that focus of the universal spirit can hold it. I'm lost in my notes here, they're not terrible. So our life here is very brief, and it's very precious. And for that reason, whether we realize it or not, we plan for this life. We think it out, and we feel it out many, many years before we come to birth. And when we're here, we just race through it. It happens fast, and it's gone before you know it. Even when it's all done, we spend an enormous amount of time processing what we have learned. Our time here is valuable. Our experience, even if we're dawdling, is much too rich to be wasted. I have a favorite example of it. If you go for a walk in the woods, it's beautiful. It's peaceful. There's all of that peaceful energy in the life ether that is exuded from the trees. That's a wonderful place. But if you go with a botanist or a biologist or a geologist, things that you're just taking for granted, they can bring out so that walk through the woods has ever so much more than you can believe. Then if you go with an artist or a poet, or somebody like that, the artist will see colors of light that you don't see, or will see formations or spatial relationships that you don't see, and again, that same walk through the woods is richer and richer. So we're basically walking through the woods without any special expertise. But nonetheless, we're taking in all of this information, and this information is the time here is too precious to waste. So we spend thousands or hundreds of years, and I suppose in some cases thousands, but hundreds of years after we die, processing the experience that we have had here, because nothing should be lost. Experience is too precious to lose. And for this reason, there are purposes that are fulfilled in maintaining or keeping all of the experience that we have that are built right into our little human microcosm. It fits into the macrocosm too, but we don't have time to talk about that. In fact, we're going to be very superficial about the few aspects of what we're talking about that we do talk about. Each breath that we take in carries in it the atmosphere. And the atmosphere is more than the air. Within the air, there are the ethers. We're interpenetrated by all of the heaven realms. They all interpenetrate everything we're doing. In the atmosphere of this room, the images of everything that's happening in this room, everyone's thoughts, everyone's feelings, the astrological mood of the moment, they're all in the air. It's such that if an organism is exceedingly sensitive, virgin, the organism of an infant, when it takes its first breath, the light ether, the reflecting ether of that child's body is virgin and it's extremely sensitive. In fact, it's almost asymptotic. The sensitivity of the human organism, especially the etheric organism, is exceedingly high in infancy, so that when the first breath is taken in, the strength of what is in the atmosphere gets built right into the matrix that holds our bodies together. And we have an astrological stamp for our whole life. We are not what we are because of having taken our breath at that first moment. We are what we are because of our past history, what we have done and what we have not done, but we come to birth so that we take that first breath at the time that is harmonious with the cosmos so that we can work out our life with the greater life of the universe. The sensitivity after the first breath is diminished quite a bit so that the succeeding breaths are not as strong once the matrix has been set, but still late as 4 or 5 years old, children are all eyes and ears, and they take things in and see them and remember them, and they just feel like little sponges. They soak everything up. It's a powerful thing. So every succeeding breath is impressed on the negative pole of the reflecting ether. It travels right through the blood. This is one of the areas where the thought system associated with the reflecting ether and the love system that is associated with the heart and the blood work together. The blood carries the impress of the atmosphere to each of the negative poles of each of the reflecting ethers in our body. So we have a memory, or we have an impress of everything that has ever happened to us. Whether we know it or not, all of us have photographic memories. We may not be able to access them, but we can learn. That's what it's all about. Now, most of us do not access them. Most people don't access them until after death. And after death, when the vital body is separated from the physical body, there's still an attachment for 2 or 3 days through the silver cord. Then the individual, the spirit, watches these records unfold. They unfold and they unfold. It works in such a way that from the moment we're born, we're looking forward. And we're looking forward to when we can go to school, when we can drive a car, when we can have a family, when we can have a profession. And when our children are born, we begin to look backward. But we continue looking forward, and as we look forward, that brings us more, it winds us into our bodies. But the backward looking winds us out of our bodies, so that when our parents die and our children have their children, we're watching them and we're looking at them as they watch their kids, and we're loving the grandkids. And when we're looking back and there's nobody in front of us to emulate anymore, we our whole life is looking back, and we become more and more reflective. We become right. We get lifted more and more out of the body until finally the will to live is not strong enough to keep on going forward. And when the will to live runs out, we call that death. And when we let go of moving forward, then everything unspins, and we see everything in about 3.5 days after death, depending on how long we could stay awake when we were in the body. And then everything is taken into our higher vehicles so that it can be processed by our higher feelings and thinkings. And that's part of the work that we do after death. But nothing dare be lost. This is extremely important. This is why the Rosicrucian Fellowship students, after death, put the body on ice. No embalming, no postmortem, no organ donation, because as nice as organ donation seems to be, it interferes greatly with the process of all of that experience that you've got, and that your future evolution is going to be determined by the experience that you have. That's too precious to waste. Besides organ donation, just gives all kinds of materialistic ideas that the body's like a rifle with interchangeable parts, and we're not like that at all. It's a living organism. It's an expression of God through each of our personalities, and that's not the way for it to go. All right. Now, we're talking about exercises for bodybuilding. The Rosicrucian Fellowship has a spiritual exercise called retrospection, and it's performed at bedtime, because that's when we have the most memories. You know, we're not looking forward to anything more to do in the day, and we can look back without interrupting the forward stream of activities, and we can look back with nothing more than that to do. Sort of like being an old person, you're looking back. In this exercise, the practitioner relaxes and tries to access, not the conscious memory, but tries to access this memory, the etheric breath record memory, and tries to look at the events that have occurred during the day. This happens anyway when you go to sleep, but if you can do it voluntarily while you're awake, you get ever so much more out of it. Now we're going to go at this slowly, and we're going to come back to it several times, but even at that, we're not going to say a whole everything about the exercise that could be said, because that would take all night. That's not what the purpose of this talk is about anyway. It's extremely important that everything is backwards, and that's what makes this exercise difficult. In some of the little discussions we've had, one of the reasons for the difficulty is that it unwinds us out of our body, and you can be pretty wide awake, and you start retrospecting instead of going backwards, and you're lifted right out of your body and snap like that, you're asleep. And the other thing of it is, we don't want to face a lot of things that we did. Somebody was talking in one of the little discussion times that they've had it happen that they've started retrospection 3 times in the night, and every time they get something that they don't want to face, where they were an unpleasant person or something like that, they would fall asleep at that moment. Now, there are a lot of features to this exercise, a lot of features. For now, we'll just mention one or two to develop the stream of consciousness that we're going with now so that we can at least be objective about what we're trying to reach. We're speaking about the negative pole of the reflecting ether. And when we do that, and the exercise for accessing that involves some of the same principles that we've encountered with all of the other exercises. Use improves facility. And not only that, it not only improves our ability to use what we have, it gives us more to work with. Last night when we were talking about loving self, forgetting service, the more we do of that, the more we have the ethers driving our blood and more of the incentive to give and act in that way. Similarly, with observation, the more we observe and the more we look, the more we are capable of looking. Not just because we have a talent at looking now that we've developed, but in the act of looking, we actually attract ourselves and build into our capacity to see the stuff of seeing. It's based exactly on the principle, only in a much more interactive way, the principle that light had to be there before we could evolve an eye. And the ability to see light and work with light depends on our ability to look into the light, and when we look into the light, we draw more of it to our own being. This is what building this whole body is all about. Now, being able to access these almost perfect records in the negative pole of the reflecting ether is a skill. And it's a tremendously difficult skill. First of all, one must have concentration. In the Rosicrucian school of development, all of the exercises rely on some form of concentration. Concentration in observation, we talked about yesterday, or concentration in discrimination. If we cannot concentrate, we cannot focus on reality, and we cannot live fully. We want to have concentrated, attuned, aware lives. Too precious to waste. If we can't sustain concentration enough, we can't see how things develop. We can't even see some very subtle things if we have a short attention span. An attention span is not a matter of genetics, it's a matter of application. I am one that has had a very short attention span, but after 30-some years of working at it and working at it and working at it. It's more than 30 years. It's more than 42 or something like that. My concentration span is much better. And I see no reason that it isn't going to get better yet. If we can't sustain attention, we can't think of having anything to do with much, that has much to do with the truth. However, concentration is not sufficient alone to be able to focus into the negative pole of the reflecting ether. Something else is required, and that almost runs contrary to concentration. And that is a controlled or positive, relaxed receptivity. Whether we are observing or whether we are reobserving in memory, it's not the passive thing that physiology thinks seeing is. It's not just a matter of light just falls on us and it produces these neural actions and we see. We're saying that this is a positive activity that we look, and because we look, we see. This is again one of the ways that the observation exercise actually helps the exercise of retrospection. Now, tension is a fine thing. We couldn't move any muscles without it, but it's not appropriate for doing memory work. You know, when you have to focus on something and set it moving and hold it moving, but you have to be receptive to what is there. You're calling up a stream of images. You're not commanding them to come up. You're calling them up. And so there's a degree of relaxation. Now, at this point, something has to be clarified. Now, we've been saying all along that the more we have of the soul ethers, the more our perception and memory will improve. Now, that could lead to a misunderstanding. It doesn't mean that there will be more to see, but it means that there will be more of the medium with which to see it. It's very much like a computer screen. The more pixels there are, the better the resolution and the clearer the image. And the more we have of the light and the reflecting ether, the clearer our observations and the clearer we will be able to see our memory. Now, it's a little bit different than a computer screen because the images are suspended in something like a gel of light. And the light, as we work at it and as we become more soulful, the more we can, the brighter the light will be and when we see those images suspended. Now, some of the features about this memory are really quite remarkable. And some of them require a real expansion of consciousness to take advantage of or to appreciate. But for example, one of the things is these memory images, especially if one takes them out of the macrocosmic ether and not out of the personal ether, are such that they're interactive. Literally, you can go into the image. You can stop the moving if you want, and you can go into the image. However, it's not like the science fiction things where you can look into the past and change things and thereby change the future. A card laid is a card played, and we can't go back and change it. We get another chance to do it all over again until we get it right, but we can't go back once we've done something. Some people who look into these images are astounded to see what's in them because there are a lot of things that we're not aware of. There are a lot of things that are happening in the atmosphere of this room right now that I'm not aware of. And all this is stored. The value of the access to this memory is that this memory is not subjective. It's factual. What has happened, and facts are indubitable. The past is objective. The future is subjective. We can still make the future be something else, but when something is done, it's done, and that's very objective. And whether we like what was done or not, we can have dreams or wishes or things like that, but they don't apply to memory. It's important that we see, even without feeling, even more so with feeling, but even without feeling, to know exactly what we did. Now, Eddie corrected me today, and he did it in one of the most gentle ways possible. Last night, I was searching for the mathematical word for symmetry, and I came up with a word that was close to right, but it wasn't the same. I said isometric, and it really was isomorphic. And he brought it up today in his talk, and I thought that was really sweet. He didn't call me out and say, "Hey, you used the wrong word." He did it like just like I'm just doing my talk, and it was as gentle as the memory in the reflecting ether.
That's Eddie.
Yes. Yep.
And notice how gently I pointed out that Jeff went to the bathroom.
Jeff, did you read that?
That's it, too?
Yeah. I should have been there, too.
So, in this regard, the beauty of this memory is that it is impersonal and that it is all-inclusive. Now, our senses have limitations. We can't see 360. You know, we can only see what's ahead. We can't even see too much what's off to the side. Even if we have Capricorn rising and we have those glinting looks out of the side of our eyes, we still have limitations. The breath record takes everything that is there and brings it in. This information eventually has to be interpreted. When we view images, while we're awake, we tend to see them through our eyes or take things in through our ears or our nose or something like that. And that's very different. This memory is more than an eidetic memory. It's a total memory. And there is the problem of our consciousness that is like kinesthetics. For example, I've tried it year after year. You can look at a flower, and unless you have a history with that flower, by looking at it, you don't know what it smells like. And you can look at something, and you don't know for certain what it feels like. That there are dimensions, or there is more to reality than each of our senses covers. Put all of our senses put together gives us a pretty full view of reality, but we don't know. This is one of the big problems. Our waking consciousness is dependent upon what our experience has been. And if our experience, just think about the experiences of a blind person. Their waking consciousness of what has happened around them in the world. Now suppose a blind person dies and they start looking at these memories. They're going to see a lot of things that they didn't experience. Rosicrucian probationers are going to see a lot of things that they didn't know that they experienced. The teachers emanate at certain positions of the moon. They emanate living, moving pictures to the probationers. And they're lessons to us. And they are in our reflecting ethers. Once in a while, you can get in touch with them, and you're not retrospecting things that you've experienced, but it's like you're seeing like pictures out of the cosmos, conception, moving and doing things like that. And those are things that are in us that we don't even know about. In the total of reality, it's just like walking through the woods. We're walking through and we don't know the geology of the woods. We don't know the all of the color gradations of everything in the woods. And our entire consciousness, in some ways, is like that of a blind person. We have to expand our consciousness so that we have total kinesthesis, so that everything that all of the senses pick up is one reality. So even if we're looking at the things in the memory of nature as it resides in our vital bodies, we don't know that we're seeing, we don't know what we're seeing all. This is what expansion of consciousness means. It doesn't mean that we're going to see some far-out other world. It means, to begin with, that we're going to see this world more fully as it is. Because there's a lot we're not seeing now. You know, if you were only see a rose and you'd never smell it, you'd be missing a lot. But when you smell it, the whole lot opens up. And when we can have the experience of life more full, even on this plane, it's a very rich thing. And this is one of the reasons for open-mindedness. We're taught in the very beginning of the cosmic conception that we have to be open-minded. And we think that once we've read the cosmic conception and we assent to it, we've had intuitive experiences, the open-mindedness is done. Not the case. We have to have open-mindedness to experience reality. Because our experience of reality is not sufficient. All right, I'm on too much on the soapbox here.
Oh no, it's good. It is. Very.
I got some lice over in the basement.
Don't get it. Keep going.
when we spoke of observation, we said that discrimination shouldn't take over as a mental exercise, but it could help to clarify the facts, and it could even lead to better observation. In a similar way, discrimination also leads to purity in character. That is, by purity in character is meant that we can be objective without partisan bias, without selfish personal preference. If we can come through discrimination to see facts. Eddie and I like to watch basketball games, and neither of us are fans. We like some players and some teams, but neither of us are fans, because a fan is a small-scale race spirit. Because if there is a close call and the ref calls it right, the fans will still get on them, because the fans were looking at that event with personal feelings, with subjective feelings, and they didn't see what really happened. This is, in effect, discrimination. If we pay attention while we're retrospecting, it's like instant replay. You're not getting away with anything, and this leads to a really good objective consciousness. Like, or people that we don't like, sometimes we get a little bit out of hand, and something like this clears us up. Now, observation and retrospection are mutually beneficial to each other. All spiritual exercises are heuristic. And heuristic is a fancy word for saying self-educational. The common example is if you're trying to concentrate and you hear the cars going by on the street, that's not a sign of failure, that's a sign of success. You have expanded your consciousness so that you're now aware of those cars when you weren't aware of them before. Some people choose to block them out, which I think is a mistake, because that's like blocking out information from the memory of nature. You choose to see what you want to see, or you choose to concentrate on what you want to concentrate on, and that's the way to deal with the expanded consciousness, not to try to close things off, because that's going counter to what you're trying to do in the whole business. So if we're retrospecting, the pictures are dim. If we remember that, it's worked for me. I'm not a very good retrospector, and I'm not a very good observer, but I'm getting better, and that's all that counts. Evolution isn't about being the best or the perfect. It's about improving from where you are right now. But it's worked for me that there are times that images don't come clear to me. And I say to myself, that's because I wasn't in the vision when I was seeing those things when they happened. You know, like I wasn't really living, even in the impression on the negative pole of the reflecting heat in your vital body. If you're living stronger, the images are stronger. When our vital bodies get weaker, and we're incapable of living vitally strong with less strength, the pictures at the end of our life are weaker than those from the beginning of the life. Like young people who are vigorous and really enthused about life, those memories are much stronger. Every study of memory has shown that kind of thing. By the way, I mentioned the book on demonism. Remember the book that you read back in the 70s about the man that was an demonist that could remember everything?
Right.
You remember the title of the book and the name of the man? Because some of the people here might want to read that book.
That, again.
The title of the book, I think it was something like The Life of a Demonist or something of that nature. The man who could, you give him a page or two of the telephone book, and then he could remember everyone, like walking down the street and seeing the mailboxes
right,
with
right.
names on.
Yeah, I'll see if I recall.
Okay. Yeah. This is an exercise to put in memory.
I remember back in the 70s.
M-N-E-M-O-N-I-S-T. It gives me a chance to take a break. This is going to be a little bit longer than I expected.
Oh, good.
But just for the fun of it, this is how I spell things for phone operators. We don't use phone operators anymore, but this is a spelling of cap. C as in phonian. A as in aisle, M as in mnemonic, and P as in pneumatic. I've done this before.
Shame on, shame with you. Shame on you.
How many times have you had to retrospect that?
Every time he does, he laughs.
Likewise, if we can see, and especially if we can feel where we erred, then the next day we won't make those same errors. And when we see it, these things build on each other. You pay more attention to observation, your retrospection goes better. You work on your retrospection, it's easier to work on concentration. You all work together. Now, when we work from the present to the past, we see causal connections in an indubitable way. When we work from the present to the future, this cause may have this effect or this effect or this effect. But when you work from this event and then look back and intuitively make the connection, you have a logical connection that you can't doubt. This is really wonderful. This is how the positive pole of the reflecting ether, which has to do with logical thought, is related to the activity in the negative pole of the reflecting ether. Some of these will come up a little further on. Let's start switching to the positive pole of the reflecting ether. The function of the positive pole, the reflecting ether, is carrying out thought. It isn't thinking thought, though there is something like thought, it is carrying out thought. It is not merely transporting thought from the mind through the reflecting ether in the etheric brain, and then into the brain, and then into our body. It's a little bit more proactive than that. On the other hand, it's not deliberative thinking. Deliberative thinking is a much different thing. I got something in here for you. Now, as fast and as wondrous as the mind is, not the brain, but the mind, it would be terribly inefficient to, in the mind, deliberate all the possibilities of a thought. It would be cumbersome. It would consume so much of our total psychic energy that it would inhibit action. For example, I'll give you a metaphor that's like it. We go to a mechanic to do the maintenance on our car, because it would be terribly inefficient to go to the mechanical engineer who designed the car. He designed it and other people carry out the maintenance. So when basic thoughts are completed as thoughts, but not fully ramified, they're completed by the thinker, by the self, by the focus of God that does the thinking in the mind. They are projected. And there is a special resonance between the positive pole of the reflecting ether and the mind. And they're projected into the positive pole of the reflecting ether. And then they splash out. There are all kinds of deductions and ramifications that can be made from any one given thought. I mentioned this in one of the earlier talks, but it's worth mentioning again. If you take a nap, this is just an example of one way that it happens. If you take a nap at a time when you're not used to sleeping and you're not tired, you don't go fully out of your body in such a way that you are can focus in the positive pole of the reflecting ether. And when you do, you can see some of the thoughts that you've been having. Only a few of the conclusions came through to your consciousness, but there are many, many others that fan out. And this propagatory function is a function of the positive pole, the reflecting ether. And the more that we carry them out and the more we can bring them to our consciousness, the more fulfilled things are.
In a simplified way of saying it is that when people say, I'll sleep on that, and then
yes.
the answer comes to
yes.
them?
Yes, because sometimes we have a lot of psychological resistance, and sometimes the vital body is shriveled up before we go to sleep, and when it gets harmonized and cleansed by the resonance from the higher spiritual worlds while we're asleep, we come back fresh, and things that couldn't come through the vital body can come through the next day. And sometimes it is a matter of self-suggestion. And self-suggestion is very valuable. It's way off topic, but very valuable as far as the etheric vital body is concerned. You're suggesting to yourself that you're going to nudge some of these thoughts and bring it through. Say, it even works with memories. You can bring back memories even several days later. Now, there is something like thought that takes place in the positive pole, the reflecting ether. It's sort of like a cunning, automatic mind. Some things happen automatically. I have an example from the more terrible part of my youth. I went with a friend, we went rabbit hunting, but we only had one shotgun between the two of us. And since it was my father's shotgun, I got to use it first. And this rabbit got scared out, and I went to shoot it, and I couldn't do a thing. And I gave it to my friend, gave the gun to him, it was his turn. Next rabbit scared out, just ups and shoots it. The reason why I couldn't wasn't something humane. It was because I was trying to deliberate it. I was trying to calculate it, and I didn't know how to calculate it. But with an automatic instinctual mechanism from that reflective mind in the reflecting ether, he just went up and it was like when a basketball player who doesn't think at all, he just goes to the hoop, he knows how to do it. And it's an instinctual reaction, and that's in the reflective mind. I don't think we should cultivate a lot of instinctual mind activity, but some of it is necessary for our existence and knowing when and how to use it. It's just like Eddie was talking before. Some things happen. You want to punch the guy in the nose before you've had a chance to see what you're doing and to deliberate. Oh, she's going to hear now that you talk about punching people in the nose.
Wouldn't you call it we're learned?
What?
Isn't that more learned, and then it becomes automatic because you've done it?
I think it's automatic because it's been in our consciousness for so long. I think it's part of almost like from when the times when we were ruled by group spirits. For example, I think animals do not calculate when they're, like if a cheetah is chasing down an eland or something like that, it isn't mm-hmm. calculating that. It instinctually knows that. It's guided by the group spirit, but that gets built instinctually into the animal. And there are certain things that, especially when it comes to self-defense, that we react automatically. It's really surprising how the automatic things that come out of our lower nature, things that we would never deliberately do. I think the most common example that has shamed every one of us once is when a friend has told us something in confidence, something that was very painful to them or very touching to them, or maybe one of their serious sins or something like that, and we promise we'll never say anything, and then someday we're angry at them, and without even thinking about it, we throw it back in their face. And it's almost like when we're in that anger mode, we're almost like animals. We're living in some kind of instinctual state, and we do things. This is why the sooner the spirit can be in touch and that we live fully conscious and present lives, and we're present in all that we do, the better it is for us. But this is going way, way, way too long. We're probably over an hour already, and we're not even halfway through. Uh-huh. Some of these thoughts, one of the best examples of one of these chains of thoughts are when the spirit takes the higher vehicles and withdraws because it is afraid or something happens and it doesn't want to meet the things of the world. For example, schizophrenia. In paranoid schizophrenia, when a person is paranoid and the spirit has withdrawn, the lower part of the desire world will work together with the positive pole of reflecting ethers, and they'll say, that guy across the street is signaling to somebody, and they're in touch with the CIA and the police and the Coast Guard and whoever you can think of, and they'll come up with deductive chains that are amazing. Very amazing. And it isn't just deductive thoughts. I knew one person that had an experience in positive polar reflecting ether that started a line of music going. And then he said that what happens is that he could start another line of music and relate it to the first. And it was just like Johann Bach could do. Like right in the ethers alone, he had three lines of music going in something like a fugue. Then he got excited and lost it. And he was never able to get back to that state again.
Richard?
Yes.
Can you clarify pole?
We did that in the second talk.
Everyone understands what that means, the positive and negative pole,
yes,
of the ethers?
I'll give you a real quick rendition. From the desire body back into the spirit, the inward is more important than the outward. And by the time you get to the life spirit, everything is inward. In the chemical region of the physical plane, everything is outward. Such that if I cut your body open, it would be just another outside. The part of the function of the ethers is to transition things from the more inner poles to the more outer poles.
And where are the poles, though?
From the more inner worlds to the more outer worlds.
Okay.
And the adjustment of the ethers, the face of the ethers that faces the more inward worlds, is called the positive pole, because it is more the activating pole. Like the light ether activates the blood, warms it, and drives it. Whereas the negative pole is more associated with the passive functions where form dominates, like the negative pole of the light ether is the receptor from light that comes from without, or for any kind of perception that comes from without. So the polarities of each of the ethers, the positive, you know, like if you take in a chemical ether, the positive pole comes from the spiritual worlds and it attracts things, because basically these spiritual worlds are more attractive. The negative pole rejects them and throws them out. It would probably be much wiser to say, instead of using the positive pole, if you take the inner pole or the inner face of the ether, and instead of saying the negative, you took the outer face or the outer pole.
So if we took the image of a cell.
Mm-hmm. See, this is materialistic thought. This was also covered in one of the earlier talks.
So I'm asking good questions then.
Yeah. It's linear, but it's not a pole. It's basically a stick is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
A pole has to do with the flow of energy.
Right.
The flow,
so it's a stream.
It's another word. Not quite like a stream, because we have rivers that run downhill, and they aren't polarized, even though they go one direction.
But within us, though, are the ethers are streaming,
yes,
through us.
Yes.
And are there eight streams? You're saying
four streams.
And each stream has a different function and polarity.
Yes.
So as it passes through the different systems of the body relating to its function, it has a certain manifestation.
Correctly.
Okay.
In fact, if you go so far, is the Garden of Eden, which we lost when we fell, that means we lost the inner vision. The Garden of Eden had four streams flowing into it. And those four streams are the four ethers. That's a biblical metaphor, but all right. Boy, we're way... I hope you guys are...
Now that's interesting.
Tigers and
I hope you guys are ready for a long night, because it sounds like it's going to be a long night. All right. When we spoke of the light ether, we said that loving, self-forgetting service to others is the shortest, safest, and the most joyful road to God. Service is not limited to the light ether and the heart system and the blood system. The mind and the reflecting ether and the nervous system and the nervous fluid have their own special service. This is the Oriental light. The ancient Chinese have a proverb that says, if heaven can create a thing, earth can find a use for it. This one really is Chinese. You know, there was a long time that I thought that one thing, what is the quote? Yes, I thought it was from Chinese and was actually from William Blake. That was the famous quote, if a man persists in his folly, he will become wise. That sounds so much like Chinese, but it's actually William Blake. So if heaven can create a thing, earth can find a use for it. And for the Chinese, that probably means food, because the Chinese eat anything and everything. Our diet, you know, the American diet is terrible because it doesn't have variety. And the Chinese diet has unbelievable amounts of variety. The spirit of that proverb or that statement of the Chinese is right at the heart of the evolutionary creation. Everything in the creation provides a service. Even the least evolved things provide a service. The life wave that is our current mineral kingdom, which is has nothing but resistance in a way, its very resistance and its stubbornness, which is the negative pole of the will, which will become a divine spirit later on, this stubbornness allows us to have a body that just doesn't fall down into a puddle. It just doesn't disintegrate. The plant kingdom gives us light. We have sacrificed the ability to take sunlight in order to experience desire and to experience God. So the plant kingdom gives us life. The spirit of the animal kingdom, or I should say the spirits of the animal kingdom that form the circle of animals that we call the zodiac, gives us a whole spectrum of feelings. But humans, our service to the cosmos is thought. The more we think and the more we carry out our thoughts into the world, the more we are fulfilling our spiritual purpose. The more we remember the effects of those thoughts and carry them back into the spirit, the more we fulfill our evolutionary purpose, our service. Earlier, yesterday, when we were talking about observation, we said that we are the only self-conscious beings that can see the finalized glory of the external world self-consciously. We are the only beings that can think about the nature of the external world. It is our duty, it is our privilege to think about the things of the external world and to complete our thoughts. Now, this doesn't mean that we have to become scientists or we don't have to think like logicians. Artists think in different ways. They think thoughts that the scientists would never think, but they think. And because they do, they come to understandings about the nature of form and about the nature of substance and light and everything else in the external world. And that thought is our service, because that's going to lead to the changing consciousness of the evolving creatures. Yes?
Would you say again what you mean by completing the thought?
Completing the thought is bringing it all the way into the physical world. Those thoughts that are ramified. If we don't think and if we don't practice spirit, putting the spirit into our thoughts, they'll never get out to the external world. This is one of the biggest things in Rosicrucian philosophy. We can't go into it. But the same thing that gives us that will to live, to cause us to spin forward and deeper in matter, all of that begins as a thought. And the will to live of the spirit, when focused through a thought that is the thought of our life, becomes the stuff of our entire life. And so there is a connection between that and the quality of our life. But every, I think that people live longer now, not because of medicine, but because we, after many, many lives, we're becoming stronger thinkers, and the will can, the collective general will, not the specific will, but the general will of the spirit can be put into the archetypes so that we can produce archetypes that live longer and we as human beings live longer. But it applies to every thought we think. A lot of thoughts we think never make it. They never get beyond the fight with the desire body. And some of them never have the oomph to get through the ramifications in the vital body and actually into the brain. So it's important that we complete a thought that we know that we don't have to do the thinking in the body. We're going to come to that. We're going to talk about that a lot tomorrow night, thinking outside the body. We think in the mind, but we carry the thoughts all the way through. But it's really important that we think. The thoughts don't have to be conventional. They don't have to follow any line of thought that anybody has ever had before. Probably the more original, the better. As long as we check them for truth or improve in our ability to be true thinkers and carry them out. Ask yourself questions about the world. Even if you look at a cloud and say, that cloud looks like a ducky. It's all right. That's serving the higher art that is behind the making of that cloud. Okay, so far we have looked a little bit at the soul body in the big picture. We've looked at the ethers and how the soul ethers are developed. That's what we've done last night and tonight. If we are doing dense body building, we take in the right nutrients, and they complement an exercise regime. That's what we have discussed. But we have to do more than that in soul bodybuilding. Even in physical bodybuilding, we have to prepare the food, we have to digest it, we have to absorb it, and we have to consciously assimilate the food to the part of the body that it needs to go to. You know, the brain only takes sugars and the heart only takes oils. It's called assimilation. Something goes to, it's similar for what it needs. So this brings us back to the retrospection exercise at the place where we left it, almost exactly. When one immerses one's consciousness in the activity of remembering from consequence to cause, while watching at the same time, something happens. Cause and consequence, the connection is neutralized in a way. It isn't dissolved, but the impetus that went from cause to consequence binds things in looking at things that way. But if we look backwards from consequence to cause, there is a balancing or a neutralization. And when this happens, several other things happen as a consequence of it. Number one, it was what was in Eddie's talk, he was talking about the region of impressionability. That when we look at these images and they get neutralized, just the act of looking at them and neutralizing them takes the images and builds them into the region of impressionability in the desire body. And when they're built into the region of impressionability in the desire body, the desire body gets more form. Right now, the desire body is pretty, we have a few entities hanging in there. If we're nasty, we've got the vortices that are spinning depending on how much we put into our desire function and how clear we are about them. But the desire bodies are relatively unstructured. But the more we build this experience into them, the more structured they become. This is another way that the exercises help each other. We have then a structured desire life, because most people with their desire life are like a dog that's been penned up for a long time, and you let it loose in nature. It bounds here, and something's got its attention, and it bounds there, and it bounds, and it's impulsive. But the more that you have structure in your desire body, it's sort of like having a musical composition. A musical composition has a structure to it, and it holds together. And this is one of the things that is accomplished by looking at the images and building them into the region of impressionability. Moreover, it does something. It builds the energy that is tied up in the cause and consequences into the structure of the soul body itself. Now, if you're sufficiently sensitive, and you're really paying attention, and you're really at peace in yourself, and you're doing a retrospection, there are times, like when you're confessing, and you say, oh my, you know, you say to yourself, you know, like when you're ashamed, you have a, like, I'm ashamed that I did that. If you're sufficiently sensitive, and your consciousness is not focused completely in the physical body, you can literally feel those little coils of gold. It's like a twitch sensation in your own etheric body. It happens very rarely, at least for me. I think it's happened 3 times in life, and only for about a half a dozen events. But I mentioned in another talk that I had a thing that I had a short amount of time to retrospect, and I just said to the Christ, show me what I need to retrospect today. And when I saw those images and it called up all of the little stinkers of the day, in each one there was a twitch inside of the etheric body itself. All right. Now, if we are bringing things into the desire body while we do this, and we're conscientious, and we refeel, we are also building the stuff into the soul body part of the desire body, so that when we re-feel things, we are less likely to have those same things develop in us. You know, we have certain patterns of thoughts, and they get surrounded by certain desires. Those things literally become entities. They become entities in our auras. Now, the psychologists like Freud and Jung, they see them as complexes. They say, you've got this complex that the energy is drawn away from the self, and it's drawn into this complex, and this is what your attention, this takes away all of your intention. If you take somebody with a primitive clairvoyance, or even the early Christian fathers that were on the desert in Egypt, they said, uh-oh, the lust demon is after me. And they could see an entity in the desire body that was associated with lust. Psychologists know it. There are times when you surprise yourself that feelings that you had 20 or 30 years ago come back at you. And you've got a lot of energy tied up in there, a lot of experience tied up in there, and it distracts and it siphons off from being able to live an elegant life with desires that follow through and accomplish things in the world. So when you do the retrospection with feeling, it also discharges the desires that are in the desire body, and you become a more clean individual on the emotional level. It's a very important function. All right. There's another way of looking at all of this, and it's equally important. When you're doing the retrospection exercise for building the soul body, you not only change the perspective from cause to consequence, instead of going from cause to consequence, you go from consequence to cause. Causes belong to us. We say somebody has a cause. When it becomes an effect, it belongs to the world. You may harbor a desire in yourself, but once you act on it and it gets out there, it belongs to the world. And in this exercise, when this is a really important part, why it's so beautiful that the memory in the reflecting ether is so objective. Because when you look at it, you can look at it at the way the world looks at it. No more subjectivity, because in subjectivity you can alibi for yourself and you can give all kinds of reasons why you got angry at that person and you were justified. But you can't do that. It's like you're in front of the jury of the world because your actions belong to the world and not yourself. And that is a really, so when you're looking in the retrospection and you're building the soul material into your soul body, both on the etheric and the desire level, you're looking with the eyes of the world, the objectivity of the world, and you can't fool the world the way you can fool yourself. And hopefully you get to this, you get to the point where you don't even try to fool yourself. All right, this is going to be a little bit long, I guess. One of the big benefits of this exercise is immediacy. There is no delay. You don't have to wait until your next rebirth in order to get the